Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, Lucas. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb sparkles here underway.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Andy DeBerry. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time, patience.
Good Skittles time. You're never too old for Skittles.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to H4TV News. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield. I am here with my beloved colleague, Xander Manning. Xander, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Jesse?
I am doing great. I got to tell you, man, it has been such an exciting week here in Boston sports. We have had big trades, big signings, big injuries. I mean, last week we were on here, and I wasn't sure if we'd have enough to talk about because, you know, you were at that point in the sports world where just nothing was going on, and now it's next week, and what's the switch? It's like, I don't even know where to start.
We have to talk about this week.
Yeah. We'd need to exactly.
Too
we'd need. Ugh. And unfortunately, we've only got 30 minutes, so let's not waste our time. Let's get right into it. Let's start with the Celtics. Last week, we saw the trade deadline come and go, and it just came and went with an explosion. Trades left and right, and of course, the Celtics were not going to be left out. And boy, did they make made an impact. The biggest trade, of course, they traded Marcus Thornton and a first-round draft pick. You heard right, everybody. The Celtics traded a draft pick. And they picked up Isaiah Thomas. Of course, the other trade is they traded away Tayshaun Prince and picked up Jonas Jerebko and Luigi Datome. But I gotta ask you, Xander, what do you make of these trades that the Celtics pulled off?
Well, I think there's two ways to put these two trades. There's the easy solution, and then there's the tougher solution. Easy solution was Tayshaun Prince. They're either going to buy out his contract or they're going to trade him. They traded him to the Pistons, returning him to his original team that he came up with. Easy solution there. Tougher solution, though, was trying to get Isaiah Thomas. Getting rid of that draft pick, I think, is huge for the Celtics. It's really them saying, we want to make the playoffs this year. They're going to make that push. And Isaiah Thomas has had a huge impact so far. Of course, beating his former team, the Suns, in his first game with them. And with that four-point play, I just want to point that out. The guy's coming out clutch.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more there, Xander. I mean, this trade, I really feel it shows a change in direction for the Celtics. I mean, before they were just picking up expiring contracts and all those draft picks, and now they've just sort of flipped it on its head. They traded away an expiring contract in Marcus Thornton. They traded away, like you said, that precious first-round pick. And they picked up a guy that can be used more for the immediate future. And it really shows. I mean, we were talking about this last week, that maybe the Celtics could make a push for the playoffs now. I think what this shows is the Celtics front office is saying, hey, we've actually got some pretty good guys now. And, I mean, the way they've been heating up in this month of February, I mean, Avery Bradley has been an absolute monster. I don't know what he has done to turn into whoever this is, but he's not Avery Bradley anymore. He is somebody else entirely. And what you've been saying about Isaiah Thomas is absolutely correct. He's already scored 20-plus points in the first two games he's been here. Granted, he got ejected in that first game, which was not a great start. It was a debatable ejection, though.
You got to admit that.
You can debate it left and right, but still, you've got to keep it cool. You can't piss off the refs. But the fact that he's put up 20-plus points in two straight games since coming to the Celtics and coming off the bench at that, I mean, that's just incredible. That's an incredible addition to the team. And as I've said, I think that's just they're going places. It's a change in direction and shows they are going places.
Well, I mean, it's especially a good pickup, too, with, like, Jared Sullinger getting being out now for the rest of the season with that ACL tear, you got to find someone to replace
absolutely.
Him. Isaiah Thomas is that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the next question I was going to talk to you about. Jared Sollinger, ready for – we talked about the good stuff. Now we've got the bad news, Celtics fans, and that is that Jared Sollinger is out for the season. He's having season-ending knee surgery. This has got to really stink for the Celtics, Xander, because Jared Sollinger, I've been saying it all the time, he is their most consistent performer. He's the guy you can always count on to put on double-digit points as well as a decent amount of rebounds. You know, he's easily been the top performer on this team, you know, after they traded away Rajon Rondo and Jeff Green. And, you know, to lose him to at the end to for the season, you know, what does this mean? Are the Celtics playoff hopes that we've been talking about just...
I'm going to say this. It hurts a lot. Yes, I know that pun was intended there. But honestly, I don't really think this is going to affect them at least 100%. It's not going to hurt them so much that they miss the playoffs, but it's going to hurt them in the short run. I mean, like you said, Avery Bradley is just caught on fire, and I think that's really going to help them a lot. And Isaiah Thomas, like I said, he's the guy who can take the place of Jared Sollinger right now. He's been on fire. Avery Bradley's on fire. Brendan Bass has been heating it up. I mean, I still think they're all set. I just don't know how far they're going to make it to the playoffs now.
I got to say, though, man, I do love that you're saying that Isaiah Thomas, who I think is like 5'9 or something like that, is going to take the place of Jared Sollinger, one of the Celtics' most effective big men. I know what you're saying. He's taking his place in terms of a scorer, but still I find it absolutely hilarious that Isaiah Thomas is going to take the place of Jared Sollinger when Sollinger's got a good foot on him.
Well, I never said anything about height or as a big man. I think he's going to take his place as a scorer. And this, you can't replace him as a big man on the court. That's completely impossible right now with the team
no,
Celtics have.
Like I said, man, I know what you meant. I just find it to be absolutely hilarious. It's like, hey, Jared Sollinger's gone, but we got this guy. That guy is a foot shorter. Ah, we're fine. We're fine.
Hey, at least it's
no,
not Nate Robinson.
He's the same height as Nate Robinson.
That's the point.
But no, you're right. He can drive and he can score, and that helps. That certainly helps.
Exactly.
But we're going to move along. We're gonna wrap up this Celtics segment really quick. We've got a couple minutes before we go to commercial. So really quick, you talked a bit about the Suns game that they won 115-110. These high scoring games they've been having recently, but they won 115-110 on Monday. So wrap that up really quickly for me, and then let's have a quick preview of tonight's game. The Celtics have a game tonight against the New York Knicks. Tonight at 7:30. So let's really quickly break down Monday's game and preview tonight's game. Give it to me, Xander.
Well, the game against the Suns was exactly what I was saying last week about what the Celtics need to do a lot better. They need to score early. They need to score more early. They did that, and they came out firing, and they won that game fair and square, even though Suns are easily one of the better teams, if not the best team in the West. They came out firing. They showed that they were the better team, and that's what I want to see from the Celtics.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you see? What do they got to do against the Knicks tonight?
They just have to do the same thing. They need to come out firing. They need to win those battles in the paint. They need to hit those three-pointers when they want to. But the Knicks are the worst team in the NBA. But that doesn't mean anything to me right now. The Knicks are a team that's always giving the Celtics trouble, no matter what place either team is in, whether the Knicks are 20 games behind them, they're 10, or wherever they are now. They're going to give them a little bit of trouble, but the Celtics need to come out firing. The Celtics need to get those points early. They need to get those points in bunches. And if they do that, they should be all set.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest, after the tough times the Celtics had against the Sacramento Kings and Los Angeles Lakers, I don't really feel safe with the Celtics against anybody. I mean, I don't feel they're out of the game against anybody, but I don't really feel they're, you know, it's a guaranteed win against anybody. That's sort of the state the Celtics
are in right now,
in my opinion. But we've got to go to a commercial break right now. It's been a good first 10 minutes, good first segment with the Celtics. But when we come back, we'll have plenty more Boston sports to talk about. We'll be able to talk to Bruins and all the stuff they've been doing. And, of course, all the big moves the Red Sox have been doing. They've been making some big splashes themselves. So there's plenty to talk about, plenty of excitement left. So please stay tuned. You don't want to miss this. Now I'm here. Now I'm here. Now I'm here.
now I'm there.
Welcome back. We are here at H4TV News. I am Jesse Mayfield Sheehan. I am still joined by Xander Manning, and we are still talking Boston sports. Why? Because Boston is our home. Yeah. Yes, I just made that reference, and yes, I kind of just screwed it up, but I'm trying here, guys.
It's a great song. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It truly is. It truly is. I could have done it a little more justice with that reference, but like I said, all I can do is my best.
Boston!
Thank you for that, Xander. That was beautiful. Best part of the show, without a doubt. I don't care what we do from now on. That was the best part of the show. But we're going to move on. We talked about the Celtics the first segment. We're going to talk about the Boston Bruins now. They recently finished up a road trip that could only be described as, well, frankly, roadkill, because they lost four straight. It's accurate, man. They lost four straight games. They managed to make it out alive.
Trust me.
Yeah, you're laughing because it's true. I mean, they lost four straight. They got out with a little dignity there. They got that 6-2 win over Chicago, which must have been a little fun for the Bruins fans to see. You know, it's like, hey, at least we got to beat the Blackhawks. So, Xander, talk to me. What happened to the Bruins on the road here?
Well, first of all, I have three words to describe this road trip to the West. Complete, utter shit. That's all. But this is what happens. When you have a team that can't score goals or that can't support themselves, you're going to lose to teams like Edmonton, Calgary, St. Louis, and Vancouver. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then you go into Chicago and you somehow win there? What? I don't understand this. I mean, granted, I understand St. Louis. We're probably going to lose that game. They give us trouble. Malcolm Subban was making his debut. But I don't understand how you can lose to Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver, beat Chicago. Bruins were outscored 20-15 on this trip. They were only outscored by five goals, but it seemed like so much more back here in Boston.
Well, I mean, maybe that's because they scored six of those goals in just one of those games. Maybe that had something to do with it.
It could be.
Yeah, maybe they could have taken a few of the goals they scored against Chicago and used them on some of those other games. Maybe that would have helped a little.
Maybe Edmonton in the shootout.
Yeah, that certainly could have helped a little.
The game that frustrated me the most though was the Calgary game. Honestly, the Bruins were up 2-0 going into the second period. They scored a third goal. Just a minute into the second period, they're up 3-0. Jonas Hiller comes in, and automatically the mindset goes to him when he played for the Ducks, and he shuts them out, and Calgary ends up winning with a second left in overtime. Come on. That's what I call ridiculous.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the frustration continues for the Bruins. Like you mentioned, Malcolm Subban made his debut against the St. Louis Blues on Friday, and that just went fantastic for him. He allowed three goals in 31 minutes in that game before being pulled, and then was sent down to Providence the next day as Ryan Spooner was called up. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say that it went fantastic? I meant it went quite terrible. So we were talking about Malcolm Subban being called up last week, and it sounded quite exciting. It sounded so promising when we were talking about it last week. So once again, Xander, what happened? What is going on?
It's the defense. It was the defense the whole trip. Their defense was horrible, and I personally would attribute to this Mapkowski, but that's just me. But this game, Subban's debut, honestly, it may have been the worst game of the trip. Maybe he led them 3 goals in 31 minutes, like one goal every 10 minutes. But it's just a bad debut. I mean, come on, Chiarelli. You're sending the guy down way too soon. Let him start another game. Let him start a game against, I don't know, Buffalo maybe? Maybe he could win his debut against win another game against Buffalo, show that he's actually a good goalie before you just send him back down to Providence and go to Svedberg again.
Yeah. Certainly a tough start to Malcolm Subban's NHL career. Certainly not the shining start he may have been looking for, but perhaps we'll see more of him in the future. And for now, we're just going to have to see more of Ryan Spooner, who you were talking about last week. So maybe we'll go ahead.
I just want to go back to the Subban topic. Also, I said last week I thought he should start against Edmonton, and I think that was the perennial mistake of that road trip, having Tuukka Rask start 3 games in a row. He hasn't started 3 games in a row all season, and you put him in there for a 3rd game in a row against a team that he's going to be tired. He's been on the road for 4 days, and then you put him in against a team that he should easily beat. Edmonton's been playing a homestand, and he's obviously tired, and he loses in a shootout. To who? Martin Marincin. Granted, happy birthday, your 23rd birthday, you score a goal, but I don't see why you start Tuukka 3 days in a row. I think that's just stupid.
It certainly was a quick changeover. You know, starting 3 games in a short amount, 5 days, certainly is tough. I mean, Tuukka's your main starter, so I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, he was making a lot of starts, given that Svedberg was out. But so it was certainly the longest, streak that he had probably seen all season. But, I mean, you got to be able to count on your goalie to do that. But, I mean, like you've been saying, I think it really is what you've been saying, which is the defenders have really, just not been playing up to par with what they were playing like last year. What?
Bartkowski.
Yes. Let's just blame it all on Bartkowski. Boston Bruins fans, we found your scapegoat for the entire season. He may not have played in every single game. He might not be on every single defensive line, but he is to blame for all of the Bruins' defensive woes. It is Matt Bartkowski, everybody.
I'm not blaming him for everything. I'm just blaming him for the road trip problems.
All right. He may not have played in every road game. He may not play on every defensive line, but he is the cause of all the Bruins' struggles on the road. He is Matt Bartkowski, everybody. He's Matt Bartkowski, and he is the scapegoat of the Bruins. All right. That's awesome. All right, next, we're going to continue with the Bruins, and what we have is some good news. No, actually, we don't. We have more bad news because this is just the kind of season the Bruins are having. David Krejci, who was starting to look good and healthy, and we all were so sure that was going to last, weren't we, Xander? And now, on that Friday game, which was going so well for the Bruins, David Krejci partially tore his MCL in his left knee and is now out for 4 to 6 weeks. It was looking so good. It was just that game was going so well for them and everything was looking so great. And screw it, I'm done with the sarcasm. Xander, tell me what does another loss of David Krejci do for the Bruins?
It really impacts the Bruins' power play right now. Power play is looking sloppy. The power play doesn't have that consistent guy up at the blue line. They've got Torrey Krug. They've got Riley Smith. Okay, that's great. No. You need David Krejci to have a good power play for the Bruins. And right now, the other guy who I would say is a close second to how good the power play is and can be attributed that to is Carl Soderberg. And Soderberg he's been better, but he hasn't been good. It's going to hurt the Bruins, but I'm not going to say that it's go as far as saying it's going to hurt them so far as they're going to go way downhill. They may go downhill a little bit, but I don't think it's going to kill them. It's not going to kill them, but it's going to hurt them. But the thing that's going to hurt them the most, we talked about last week, I think I still stand behind it, is the Kevin Miller injury. That's what's going to hurt them the most.
It, I mean, losing the guy with the losing your defender with the highest plus minus, you know, on a team
on
that, like you, we've been saying all the time, is having such a struggle with defenders. Losing a guy like that is definitely a big loss. I mean, it's a huge loss to lose your frontline center on a team that's been struggling so much offensively, which I honestly think is one of their bigger struggles. I think that's a huge loss. I don't think that's to be underestimated. But, you know, certainly, you know, the loss of Miller is at least just as big. So that's been – this has been a thoroughly depressing Bruins segment, so we're going to move on to the Boston Red Sox, who have made some big news. They signed 19-year-old Cuban infielder Yoan Moncada. He has just been the talk of the town. You know, this is, you know, one of the biggest prospects out of Cuba, and they signed him for a $31.5 million contract, which ultimately cost them $63 million because they had to pay a 100% tax due to a penalty for going over the limit they could go on international spending. So, Xander, did the Red Sox just make the steal of the year, or are they spending too much on an unproven guy?
I'm going to answer with a combination of the two. I think they're spending too much on a prize prospect. It was a steal, but I don't know if he's worth $31 million. Granted, they had to go to $31 million so the Yankees didn't scarf him up and start him at shortstop to replace Derek Jeter. Thank you for not going to the Yankees, Yoan. Thank you. I like that. But I don't really understand what they're going to do with him right away, if they're going to just put him straight down to the minors. But they could use him as a trade piece, which I do like that. They could platoon him at shortstop. There's a lot of things they could do with him. But it's going to be – I think it's a great move for the future. I'm not going to say it's a great move right away because – A, he hasn't proven himself, but I think it's a great move for the long run. So, yes, it's a steal.
Yeah. See, to me, I don't understand it. I get it's definitely stealing from the Yankees. I mean, definitely if this was a court of law, they'd be, you know, hauling away the Red Sox in handcuffs because they absolutely stole this from the Yankees. But, I mean, really, they just, you know, paid $63 million for a guy that everybody's considering a first-round draft pick. First-round draft picks get, you know, maybe $10 million, probably less, in a rookie contract. You're telling me you're spending, like, six times that for a guy that may be the future of your franchise and may blow out his knee next week in training camp? I don't get – it's just so many different factors, so many different things that can go wrong with draft picks. I mean, you see these lists – all over the internet of guys who were supposed to be the future of a team and just wound up being a complete bust. And that's why, you know, $63 million for, you know, for a guy that's only played 2 years in the Cuban National Series, has not played in a year and a half, is only 19 years old. I mean, yeah, everybody just keeps talking up his raw talent and his potential, and that's great. But, I mean,
but
for goodness sake, he was hitting like 270 and had four home runs in the Cuban series. I mean, when Jose Abreu and Yoenis Céspedes were taken out of the Cuban league, those guys were easily the two best hitters in that entire country. This guy is like the best prospect of the country. But, you know, again, it's a prospect. You paid $60 million for a prospect. You don't spend that kind of money on a prospect. You spend that kind of money on a veteran. And my biggest question on this, which, you know, the Boston Globe asked a similar question in an article they wrote recently. Where was all this money when they were trying to sign John Lester last year?
They messed up. They completely messed up the negotiation. They wanted to negotiate. Lester just wanted to know how much they were offering. They messed it up. At the same time, though, they did offer Lester more than this. They did offer more than this to Lester, but, I mean...
Yeah, no, I'm not saying offer Lester this. I'm saying take some of this money and add it on to the deal for Lester so he doesn't go to Oakland. And then eventually to Chicago, you know, like, I'm just saying, invest in the guys that are going to make your team better. I mean, I know everybody's saying it's a pitcher's league, so you don't need to invest in pitching. That's baloney. Baseball is always
it's completely bull.
I mean, in case everybody hasn't noticed, the San Francisco Giants won 3 of the last 5 World Series. I mean, baseball, I don't care if it's the steroid era or the dead ball era. Baseball is always going to be a game that's won by pitching by the sheer fact that it's the one major sport where the defense has the ball. So I would always say to invest in pitching, especially considering they are the cheapest position in all of baseball. Starting pitching, relief pitchers are the cheapest average position in baseball, followed by starting pitchers. They don't cost that much money. Why are you investing this much money in a guy who, again, unproven, and you just don't know if he's going to be the future of your franchise or not? And even if he is, this is a guy who is an offensive player. He's going to account for, at best, a ninth of your team's at bat. He's not going to win you a World Series on his own. It's crazy to me.
Let's also look back to last summer, too, the Red Sox made signing the 16-year-olds from Venezuela in pitching. I think that was a debatable signing there, honestly, for me, because the guy's 16, enough said right there. He hasn't proven anything. He's just a 16-year-old who can throw an 85-mile-an-hour fastball. If I worked out enough, I could probably do that, and I'm 18. I mean, did the Red Sox want to sign me to pitch? Okay, that's great. But I think you need to invest more in position players, because the position players are the ones who carry the offense, and the offense can't do anything if there isn't good pitching, because I know from playing baseball as a first baseman that if the pitching isn't very good, I'm not going to want to hit the ball very hard. I'm not going to want to try when I'm up at the plate.
My feeling is pitching is something you got to invest in. It doesn't cost as much because it's the cheaper positions at present moment, but because, you know, it's not what sells. Homers are what sells in baseball, so obviously the big home run hitters are the ones that are going to be costly.
Exactly.
But if you want to win World Series, I say invest in some good pitchers. That is how you win ball games, is with good pitching. It may be boring, but it's what's going to win you ball games.
My thing with the Red Sox. I really don't think their goal right now is going to be to win the World Series. Honestly, obviously, everyone loves to watch a team go from worst to first, but I think, honestly, the Red Sox goal this year is just going to get to the playoffs. They just need to get to the playoffs, and then they'll let everything else start talking. Because last year was just completely dreadful, both from a fan's perspective and an analyst's perspective. It was an absolutely dreadful season. I think they just need to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Well, we'll certainly see what happens. I mean, you know, in 2013, we were all just thinking, oh, please just let them not be as bad as they were in 2012. Let them at least improve. Maybe if they're lucky, make the playoffs. And then they just shocked the world and made the World Series. So we'll see. But as we run out, as we start to wind down on this episode of H4 TV News, I will just say that, in my view, the Yoan Moncada deal, it's, you know, yes, it's a steal from the in the sense that they took it away from the Yankees, but in my view, it's overspending. It's such a big risk. He's so unproven at present moment. You know, maybe in a few years I'll wind up with egg on my face and he'll be, you know, the greatest baseball player of all time, the greatest player in Red Sox history or something. But for right now, what I'm saying is it's far too big of a risk. Any closing words from you on this, Xander?
I'm going to stand behind my statement. I think it's a great investment. I mean, they need to start planning for the future, so I think it's a good idea to plan for the future here.
I think it's too much money to invest in a prospect, but I respect your opinion. I know a lot of people share that with you. But for right now, we are going to call it here. This is the end of this episode. It's been great. We've had so much great topics to talk about. It's been such an exciting week in Boston sports, as I have said. So for Xander Manning, I am Justin Mayfield Sheehan. It's such a pleasure to deliver this episode of H4 TV News to you. And please tune in. Next week, we'll have another exciting Boston sports